This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
We are standing by. We're moments away from the Jason Garrett press conference here on your home of the Cowboys. He'll face the media. What kind of a mood do you think he'll be in? The Garrett presser brought to you by Ford, the official vehicle of the Dallas Cowboys. Ford is the best in Texas.
Same mood he's always in. The only time I've really seen his mood change is when they fired Scott Linehan and told him that Kellen Moore was going to be the offensive coordinator, so he refused to do press conferences at the Pro Bowl.
I remember that.
He was throwing a fit because he did not want that to happen, and so he came up with a way that it kind of wasn't going to happen.
I feel like his ability to lead has been greatly compromised. I do. And the reason I believe that, without a contract extension, he is a lame duck coach. All of the responsibilities have been taken away. And without the contract, it's like he's not the natural leader. And you know what? You look across the entire leadership structure, it's two guys on defense. It's one guy on offense in Kellen Moore, but he's being heavily influenced by Jason Garrett as Tony Romo dimed him out. And it's clearly not Garrett. Is it a team that's kind of accidentally without a leader? The team tried to give him the best coaching staff ever, but what they ended up doing was really mucking up the leadership chain of command.
Yeah.
Fair?
Yeah. I think that's totally fair.
That's always been the toughest part about being the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys after Jimmy Johnson, is it's really never been somebody's staff. The closest that it's ever been was Bill Parcells. But I mean, he even had to have Coach Zimmer as his defensive coordinator who ran a 4-3 when Bill Parcells was a 3-4 guy. And eventually, after the 1 year they made the playoffs, the next year they didn't. And Bill's like, that's it. I'm done with 4-3 coaches around here. We're going to a 3-4, and these people are out. And Jerry said okay to that. But, I mean, there's never been a head coach hired by Jerry Jones that's allowed actually to be the real, true head coach.
That's interesting because it's sort of eats away at the head coach's power if you can't have your entire group of lieutenants.
Right. Think about it. If you're Lincoln Riley, because that's the rumor out there right now that Stephen Jones has a relationship with Lincoln Riley.
Yeah.
And let's just say Lincoln's like, you know what? Yeah, I'm going to sit down for this interview. And they say, here's the deal, man. We really love Kellen Moore and we don't want to lose him. So he's your offensive coordinator.
Oh, he would say no. He would say, you're hiring me for my offense. Otherwise, we don't even need an interview.
I mean, I could train Kellen Moore in my offense and he could help me do stuff.
Then what am I going to do?
Yeah.
It's my job.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I mean, don't you think that that's always the toughest thing with – and now, when he's hired a defensive coach, he has been like, well, the offensive guys are staying, and when you've hired an offense – you know. So maybe he does let Kellen Moore go. But what – if Lincoln Riley's like, okay, well, I have to keep all my defensive coaches?
Okay, other topics from the game. Zeke was great in the second half. Were you surprised how much he needed rest? He came off the field and went back in. There was an injury, so they got like a 2-minute TV break. Then he carried it two more times and needed to come out again. Nobody else was thinking that while the game was going on.
I was 100% thinking that.
Like, wow, Zeke's really coming off the field.
Just because we're running Emmitt Smith style offense, and I'm like, Emmitt Smith didn't ask off the field when he had it going.
I mean, there were several times.
I think that's what worries me somewhere in the top three of my worries about the offense, which it's going to have to be the offense that carries this team, and so this is doubly concerning. Is how often they want to give it to him. Like, I think that's the biggest reason that they've gone away from what they were doing at first. They did what they did to start the year because they didn't have healthy, ready, in shape, let's go play football Ezekiel Elliott. And since week one, all the things we want them to do have been going downward. What's been going up? Ezekiel Elliott carries on early downs. This is Cowboy football.
Wow.
The worst thing you could do, and it's what they're going to do because they have a good player there that they gave a bunch of money to. Now it's time to justify a contract by giving him the ball too much.
Okay. Other topics from the game here as we're standing by for the Jason Garrett press conference. Should Jordan Lewis be in the game more? He certainly justified his fan base out there on Twitter who says, you know, there's the guy with the best ball skills. But he did get beat by Jamison Crowder. Both him and Anthony Brown did. So what do you make of that story?
And he got beat by Robbie Anderson for about 30 yards from the slot on a back shoulder fade. I do think that Jordan Lewis gives you a better chance to make plays on the ball than any of the other corners. And even if it's right. for that reason alone, I would say yes. I just saw Marcus Mosher.
There's a chance he intercepts the ball, which yes. Anthony Brown and Cheeto are not going to intercept it and probably get beat just as bad. They're all bad cornerbacks. They're all below average in the NFL, those three guys. And so at least, I guess, play the one that maybe has a chance of picking a ball off every once
so
in a while.
So here's a couple of fun numbers for you. Since 2014, the Cowboys have one return touchdown. Only Tampa Bay has less than that in those four-plus years. Since 2015, the Cowboys have scored two defensive touchdowns, dead last in the NFL. So as it's set up right now, the offense isn't allowed to have an off day. If you do, well, your kicker's not good. You don't do anything in the return game. You don't turn the ball over. So I need as many guys as I can find that are ball guys. And I know it was thrown right to Jordan Lewis. Other guys have had it thrown to him. They didn't catch it.
Yeah.
I would like to have him and anybody else that has a tendency to catch the ball when it's thrown to him, put him on the field.
I mean, I know getting burnt is okay. Here's Jason Garrett at the Ford Center Star.
How are we doing, guys?
Good.
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 When you look back and assess the slow starts in the last few games, when you break it down, do you in the first half, do you feel it's more a matter of preparation, lack of preparation, or lack of execution?
Yeah, ultimately, we haven't executed, and everything that we do goes into execution. So everyone has a responsibility for that, every coach, every player who's involved in each of the units of our football team. So we haven't executed well enough early on in games. If you look at the game yesterday, you know, from an offensive standpoint, we had throw and catch opportunities that we missed early on in the game that prevented us from continuing to possibly score a touchdown or keeping a drive alive or you know, maybe it was a penalty here that got us behind the chains or a penalty on defense that gave them a big chunk, all of those things. So, you know, we just have to do a better job of it at the outset of the game and really throughout the game. It's a 60-minute game. Our team has done a really good job responding to the adversities of games. Keep coming back, keep fighting, keep scratching, keep clawing. We have to execute better at the outset of the game.
Your players, that seemed to be a theme afterwards, just the inability to execute on game day. A lot of them said it wasn't the plan that was the issue. What can you do as the head coach to try and get to the root of fixing that?
Yeah, again, there are flashes of doing things very well, and there are certainly flashes of us doing things not very well, inconsistent. And so you go back and you look at the game and you identify the stuff that was good. There was good stuff. And then there was plenty of stuff that wasn't good enough. So you just try to identify that as best you can and understand what happened on that particular play. Why didn't we execute on that play? Was it an identification issue? Was it a physical execution issue? Had we practiced that enough? You ask all those questions and you continue to try to put your team in the best position possible to get ready for the next opportunity.
Amari Cooper, can you talk about his availability and for this week?
Don't really know. He has the contusion on his thigh, which obviously bothered him yesterday. He was going to try to play, and he just felt like once he got started, he couldn't play. So we'll see. We'll take a situation day by day.
Was that what he had been dealing with before? Was that something new that happened in the game?
He was dealing with that, but he was also dealing with the ankle from the week before. Both those limited him in practice all week.
You were saying it affect the offense and what you got the plan.
I'm sorry?
How much did his absence affect the offense and the plan?
Yeah, obviously Amari is a really good player. He's been an impactful player for us since we've gotten him. But like with any situation, if you have an injured player or a player is not available to you, you put the next guy in there. And I thought that the young guys who went in and played did a pretty good job. I thought they functioned well. Cedric Wilson made a number of plays in the game. Tavon did some good things for us. So that's what you have to do. When guys are banged up, you put the next guy in, you keep going.
Did you have a feeling it might be just three snaps coming into warm-ups? Did he give you guys any kind of heads up?
Did not anticipate him being able to play.
So he said during the week that the quadriceps was actually feeling a lot better and the ankle was more the issue than the quad. Was it? Did he get hit on it in that initial series or did he just...
Yeah, he ran the slant and go up the sidelines and I think when he came down, you know, he felt it and it was bothering him. So he wasn't able to continue to play.
Brandon Knight had his first start in the NFL.
NFL. After watching film, what are your thoughts on his performance?
I thought he hung in there. He battled. He wasn't perfect by any means, but there's no question he fought and scratched and clawed. At times he protected well in the game. Other times there was too much push. There were some really good examples of very effective run blocking at the point of attack when he was a puller, did some good things, and other examples, you know, not quite as good as we need it to be. So, you know, he's a young player. It was good to see him out there playing, trying to take advantage of that opportunity.
That was a lot of 12 personnel out of your offense yesterday. Was some of that game plan based, or was that really directly, as a coaching staff, your response and adjustment to the loss of Amari?
Well, certainly Amari being out had a lot to do with that. You know, a lot of young receivers would step into those 11 roles. So we gave them an opportunity to do that, but we also wanted to get the 12 personnel out there. You know, Witt and Jarwin have been really good for us playing together and just wanted to give them some opportunities. We can do a lot of our 11 stuff and 12 personnel, and those guys can handle that.
You also didn't have Cobb in that game. Just what's his health status going forward? Is he feeling better today?
Yeah, it seems like he's doing a little bit better. Again, we'll take a situation day by day. You know, he was working hard to get himself ready to play in the game, and unfortunately he wasn't able to.
Is there anything you all look at during the week or before the game on game day in terms of getting ready, just based on these slow starts, to try to shake out of these slow starts?
Yeah, again, I just think it goes back to what we're talking about is continuing to try to just simply execute better. And you look at what we're doing and how we're doing and how we're preparing, and just make sure we try to put our players in the best situation possible. But then you have to take the practice work to the game.
Can you talk about the injuries to, you know, Tyron and Bell, as well as Byron and Anthony Brown, and their availability this week?
Hard to know right now. We'll take each of those situations day by day. You know, Tyron worked out before the game and just was determined that he wasn't going to be able to go and play and be effective. So, you know, hopefully he's getting better as we go here. We'll evaluate him on a daily basis and see if he can practice at some point this week. Really the same thing with LC. He's in a very similar situation with his knee. It's day by day. And, you know, those guys are working hard to come back. You know, Byron dealing with a hamstring, so we'll see what his availability is. Don't know what it will be right now. AB the same way. He's probably a little bit behind. He's the one that, you know, I don't know when he's going to be able to practice. Hopefully this week at some point, but again, we'll take a situation day by day.
Byron's ahead of AB in that respect.
Well, again, as we evaluate it less than 24 hours after the ball game.
How will the bye week impact how you all make some of those decisions on some of these guys?
Yeah, I don't think that's going to impact it at all. I mean, you know, these games are valuable. So if a player is available to play in the ball game, he's going to play in the ball game.
Looking back at time and situation, what was the thought process behind using that first time out there in the second half when the first down was marked at the 4?
Just that it was going to take too much time to get ourselves back up there. So we wanted just to stop, take a breath, and give ourselves a chance to call something that we liked. Which we were able to do. We were able to convert the touchdown. I think it was the next play.
Are you thinking about the onside kick situation and realizing that no one really recovers these anymore, that if you use that timeout, you're kind of limiting yourself maybe to force them to kick it even if there's 40-something seconds left in the game?
Yeah, again, you have to do first things first. Obviously, we're trying to keep the timeouts as long as we could keep them, but you got to get into a play that you feel good about to go score a touchdown. Again, we were able to do that.
Do you guys have
using timeout before the 2-point conversion? Was there any thought of using
that? Yeah, and again, we've done both before. You know, sometimes it's to your advantage if you have a play that you like and you know to go ahead and use it rather than giving them time to construct something on defense. So we had a pretty good feel for what we wanted to call there, and a pretty good feel for what they were probably going to play in that situation.
Going back to the end of the first half, after Zeke loses the yard on 31, why go for it on 4th and 2 there?
Again, you want to stay aggressive and try to maximize that scoring opportunity there. You know, there have been times in the past we've kicked field goals. There have been times in the past we've gone for it. We've always tried to err on the side of being aggressive and going for it in those situations, particularly when you're down inside the 10-yard line, because if you don't make it, you know, they have a long way to go. Unfortunately, they went the long way on the next play. But, you know, that's always the thinking. You can play field position if you don't secure the first down.
Doug Peterson on the radio this morning, he said, we're going down to Dallas and our guys are going to be ready to play. We're going to win that football game. And when we do, we're in first place in the NFC East. What is your response?
Yeah, my response is we're excited about the challenge. Obviously, they're a great football team. And, you know, we're going to focus on ourselves and what we need to do to prepare to play our best football on Sunday night.
When you look at the drops from yesterday, what stands out and do you think of them more as an issue overall or one by one?
Unfortunate, to be honest with you, because those are important plays in the ball game. And, you know, Michael Gallup had a couple of them that were makeable plays for him. You know, Dak would tell you, hey, you got to get that ball down a little bit. Michael would say, I got to make that play. And we've seen those guys make those throws and catches over and over and over again. So, unfortunately, one of them would have been a converted third down situation where we would have continued the drive down in the red zone and we were forced to kick a field goal. Other ones had negative impacts on the drive. So, you know, that's a little bit what we're talking about, just throwing and catching and doing the things we're capable of doing.
Can you pinpoint why Myra can make a 60-plus yard field goal and then there's a 40-yarder, he's pushing it to the right? The closer you are, he struggles there.
Yeah, obviously he made a huge kick for us, the 62-yarder. He also made a 50-yarder. The operation wasn't quite as clean on the 40-yarder. He would tell you that I got to make that kick, but, you know, our operation typically is pretty clean. It wasn't quite as clean as it needed to be on that one.
What wasn't clean about it? It looked like he stutter-stepped as he was coming in.
Yeah, just the timing of the snap and everything.
The snap was late or the...
Just the timing of the whole thing wasn't what we needed it to be.
The design on the negated Jason Witten touchdown was very similar to the design on the week 2 score that he had in Washington. The rub route, I know there's someone different that was running it this time, but in terms of his execution, what did you see there to elicit the penalty?
Yeah, obviously they called an offensive pass interference penalty because there was contact. It appeared to us that the contact was initiated by the corner who grabbed our receiver and threw him into the other guy. Our guy was just trying to take an inside release and run a corner route, and that contact happened. So, you know, again, I don't want to talk about the officiating.
Do you guys have a litany of two-point plays, or are they just short yardage plays? How much do you guys work on two-point stuff during the week?
Yeah, we have a lot of two-point plays. You know, we work them literally every week in practice, and you know, they're important plays. So you spend a lot of time down there working on your low red zone offense, but also very specifically on your two-point play calls.
Did they surprise you by bringing the extra blocker and knowing you guys didn't have enough? I mean...
No, we anticipated heat.
Is the ball supposed to, in that situation, is the ball supposed to go outside or is it supposed to go to the crowd?
It could go anywhere, to be honest with you. We had a one-on-one across the board, so we could have thrown the fades outside. Decided to work inside to Witt.
After the Green Bay game, we talked about, you know, when a score gets away from you, it affects the way you can use your running game. Y'all seemed pretty determined to keep using Zeke in the second half yesterday. Just what you saw from the Jets or the reasoning for the way y'all played?
Yeah, we just felt like we had to be balanced throughout. Their style of defense was such they played a lot of coverage in certain situations. You knew that going in by down and distance. And so being persistent with the run, we're going to have a favorable box. If we can control the line of scrimmage, we could keep him going. And I thought that was important. I thought that had a positive impact on how we protected the quarterback, you know, throughout the rest of the ball game, not just dropping back snap after snap after snap, and simply our ability to drive the ball in each of the four drives in the second half to have scoring opportunities.
How would you assess where you are in your pass rush?
Robert Quinn had a couple sacks in the game yesterday. I think we had four or five other pressures on the quarterback that were positive plays. Obviously, you want to affect the quarterback more. When you talk about pass defense, that's where it starts. It starts up front with your ability to rush the quarterback with down guys. And then obviously you can bring some pressures and then the coverage aspect of it, both man-to-man and zone coverage behind it. But it starts up front, and we did some good things in the game, and certainly you want more.
Lawrence, are you getting what you need out of Lawrence right now in terms of the pass rush?
Yeah, obviously we want more from everybody. We want to be around the quarterback. We want to affect him. We want to sack him. And, you know, DeMarcus is playing hard. He certainly gets a lot of attention week after week from the opposing offensive lines. But, you know, he'd be the first to tell you he needs to be around the quarterback more and be more productive in that area.
You talk about the need to play complementary football a lot. Have you found right now at this point that that the team isn't doing that, that it'll do it late in the game once you get behind and you kind of have both sides play off each other, but you're not really getting that early in games.
What aspect of complementary football?
Well, just if one side is struggling, then the other side steps up and still keeps momentum from getting away from them.
Yeah, again, I thought we battled early on. You know, they had the 8-minute, 14-play drive in their second series. We came back and drove and had to kick a field goal. And we had gotten the game to a 7-3 game with 3 or 4 minutes to go in the first half with that long drive. So we were in fairly good shape, just kind of battling through the early part of it. And then we don't make the fourth down conversion. They complete a deep pass for 92-yard touchdown on the next play. So, I don't know how that pertains to complementary football. It's, you know, let's somehow, some way convert that and somehow, some way don't allow them to complete a big one coming back the other way. It's really about execution on those individual plays.
What did it stand out on the film from that 92-yard touchdown?
Yeah, as much as anything else, Cheeto needs to play out of there more, and Jeff Heath needs to play with more depth.
On the fourth down situation, as the first quarter ended and Dak was sent over to the Blue Medical Tent for a cognitive evaluation, before he was sent over, were you thinking of going for that fourth down, and did his being sent over force you to make the decision to kick the field goal?
It didn't. We were going to kick the field goal there.
How did Dak handle the pressure he faced in the game? Is your overall thoughts on that?
Yeah, I thought he did a good job. He got hit more than we wanted him to get hit in this game, but he stood in there and consistently made throws, and I don't think his decision-making was affected by it. He stood in and time again made good throws. There were a couple of them he'd like to have back. He was a little high when he was under duress, but for the most part, he stood in, made good decisions, made good throws, and gave us a great chance to win the ball game at the end.
What did you see in regard to the run blocking execution on first the third one followed by the fourth and two?
Yeah, it wasn't good enough, obviously. They committed guys to the line of scrimmage and we didn't block the interior guys well enough, and then we weren't able to capture the edge on the second play.
Should they get offloaded out of that second play? It seemed like they were overloaded to that side anyway.
He could have. We didn't think the look pre-snap was one that would get him out of that look necessarily. But again, we weren't able to capture the edge.
As more follow-up to the Peterson comment, is that something that you have already shown your players, or come Wednesday will show your players? Often when public hears something like that, first phrase it is used is bulletin board material. Is that bulletin board material for you?
Yeah, again, we probably don't want to share what we share with our players too much, but, you know, we do our best and we just focus on ourselves and what we need to do to prepare and play our best football.
Is there ever a time where you say, we focused on ourselves and we've lost three, so maybe we need to, obviously, you're still preparing for the other team, but how do you balance that?
Yeah, I think you balance that every week. Obviously, you're preparing to play an opponent. We'll have a scouting report this afternoon on the Eagles, where we'll go over all of their personnel and we'll start looking at their looks on offense and on defense and in the kicking game. So obviously you're preparing and game planning for a team, but your attention needs to be on yourself and what you need to do to play your best.
Opening drive of games as an offense, how do you get more in that area in terms of simply scoring?
Yeah, we just have to do a better job. I keep going back to this word of execution, but you know, you keep working on your opening script. And obviously everybody needs to be really comfortable with that. And, hopefully you can execute it. We've done a good job coming out in the second half. The opening drive of the third quarter has been really good for us really throughout the year. So we have to make sure we do that at the outset of the game.
How is execution not just a player's thing? And how is that involved in the coach's part of this deal? You mentioned that execution. They're the ones executing the plays.
Yeah, absolutely. How the players execute is a direct reflection on the coaches. And you have to just make sure, you know, as a position group, coordinator, head coach, everybody who's involved in it, you just have to make sure you're creating the right environment for them to take that work they do in practice to the game and execute it. You know, whether it's the number of times you run the play, the number of times you give them a certain look that they're going to see in the game, making sure you have the right answers, they communicate the right way, all of that stuff. It's what we do each and every day. So the execution is a reflection of everybody.
Have practices been such that you can foresee some of the execution issues early in games or to start?
Not necessarily. I think we practice well. Guys are working hard.
Eskin, do you find that when you're through the losing streak that consistency of approach is always the best way to keep going to get out of it? I mean, you're process-oriented anyway, and you want the consistency throughout, good or bad times, but is it even more important in your mind to remain consistent to how you go about things during a losing streak?
Yeah, I think it's important you got to be careful about using the word always and never, right? But for the most part, I think what players are looking for, what a team is looking for, is consistency, things you believe in, a structure, and something they can fall back to, a base, a foundation. And obviously you have to make adjustments as you go, whether it's personnel or scheme or whatever those smaller things are. But the big things that you believe in, the things you have conviction about, I think everyone responds best when they remain consistent.
Does there ever come a time where to use a baseball term, the manager needs to flip over the buffet table and be a little bit different to wait?
Yeah, again, that's why I said don't use always and never. There's always a time if you feel like team needs to respond differently. You know, that's part of your job. You're always trying to reach individual players. You're trying to reach the team. You do it different ways based on who that individual is and what the situation is. But that shouldn't alter your convictions about what you believe in and what the team believes in.
Are you guys close to that point in your mind where you need to alter the, maybe not the overall message, but how it's being delivered? Stay true to the convictions, but change.
Yeah, again, I think our team has responded well towards the end of these ball games. They're battling and fighting and scratching and clawing and giving ourselves a chance at the end. And so I think those are things you can build on. I think the mentality when they come back in the building on Monday and their willingness to be coachable and want to learn and get better, I think those are all the signs that you say, just keep doing what we're doing. You know, we'll make some small adjustments as we go here. But, you know, our guys believe in what we're doing. They believe in the approach, and they'll respond the right way.
Is it easier or does it get harder to block out the noise when there's criticism on you as a head coach and your staff?
Yeah, I think what we talk about right from the outset is you always block out the noise. Oftentimes there's positive noise out there that it's important to block out. We talk about that really each and every day. It's focus on us, focus on today, focus on the task at hand. There's a lot of stuff out there that's not going to be helpful and productive to us being our best individually or as a team. So whether it's positive or negative, you just lock in on yourself and what you need to do to be your best that day.
As Jason and Steven made a point to talk to you about, them continue to back you in a job you're doing, because they've been getting asked a lot of questions about your job and job security, and certainly they've just gone on record saying that they're behind you 100%. Have they made a point to say that to you, or they haven't had to?
Yeah, again, I'm focused on doing my job as well as I can do it. That's what I do when I come in here every day, and that's really what we ask all of our players and coaches to do.
Fair to say, despite all the injuries that happened yesterday, that none were significant, none were multi-game absences. But how would you characterize overall? Are there any that are particularly of alarm?
We'll see. I think for the most part, it's a fair characterization. But you know, a couple of them might be a little bit longer. But again, we're less than 24 hours out from the game, so we'll find out more as we go.
Is Dorrance Armstrong the stinger that you had in the
game? Yeah, it was his neck. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Good to see you guys.
Good to see you as well. The Jason Garrett presser brought to you by Ford, the official vehicle of the Dallas Cowboys. Ford's the best in Texas. I thought the most interesting thing he said in there, it was about 3-4 minutes ago. He said how a team executes is a direct reflection of the coaches. And I think that's important. It happened, you know, 20 minutes into the presser. But, you know, a lot of the talk is about, well, we just got to execute better. For him to say that's a direct reflection of the coaches, I thought that was very interesting. What stood out to you guys?
The one that stood out to me is the one that I think there's going to be plenty of negativity today, so I don't know if I want to do another rant. The one that stood out to me is just the acknowledgement of what we already knew when they asked him about using the timeout, and he said, well, you know, we wanted to take a chance to breathe and make sure we got the right play called. You, Jason Garrett, were the only one who needed to breathe. Only you. Your quarterback is incredible in tempo situations.
Yeah.
They're cruising. You're on the 4-yard line. It is first down. You got 40-something seconds left. If you're content to run clock, you can do that. If you want to hurry up to try to score, you got 4 plays to do it. The only thing that makes no sense there is burning a timeout. Because what happens when you burn a timeout? Well, we got to stop the clock, and instead of snapping it at 36 seconds, we got to snap it at 47. So when we scored, we had 40-something instead of 32. With 32, I'd have had three timeouts, and I'd have had a wing and a prayer to try to win the game if I don't get my two-point conversion.
They would have had no chance of coming back at you.
Right. They would have had to, but you needed to breathe. Dak Prescott didn't need to breathe.
Yeah,
Kellen Moore didn't need to breathe to call a play. The head coach needed to breathe, and that is not the first time that's been the reason he's called a timeout. And it's not the first time that he's hurt his team's chances of winning because he had to breathe.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
There's a weird thing that goes on late in games with Jason Garrett. It's a road well traveled, isn't it, Mike?
Yeah. And I know this isn't just out of that press conference, but I think the media, look, I'll say this. We want them to win really bad. Media, if the Cowboys were actually ever great in our lives of doing media here, we would get more money too. We want them to be great. It would help us out tremendously if they were good. I think there was a lot of questions in there questioning Jason Garrett. Jason, I think he does what he always does. He did not get frustrated with it. He doesn't really give you much of an answer. But after 10 years of average, we just want more.
It's very interesting. His mood was great last night as well. Even at the end of his presser, he said, "Nice to see you guys." Like, that is so weird, dude. You just lost. You were 3-0, and now you're 3-3. There shouldn't be any "nice to see you guys." There should be "good. It's over. Bye." You know, but it's really weird how locked in he can stay on that. And I don't think it makes him look good when everybody else is irritated.
Yeah, a new Mirage 411.9 only at Mesquite Mitsubishi, online at mymitsu.com.
Well, thank you very much, Lucius. Segment's brought to you by Soda, that state-of-the-art weight loss, and by Classic Chevrolet. It is time to go around the NFL, brought to you by Windstar World Casino and Resort. I'll get back to Jason Garrett press conference takeaways here on third down, but let's whip it around the room here, see what you guys got on the rest of the NFL, Mike.
Man, I would love to go first, and thank you for giving me the ball, because I go to NFL.com, and they rank the losses around the NFL, and number one, they rank the Los Angeles Rams as the biggest loss yesterday, losing 20-7 at home against the 49ers. Now, this is interesting, Cowboy fans, if you're not following the 49ers, because well, they must be just super healthy, right? Here's how it starts off. Everything about this loss felt terrible for the Rams. The magic has disappeared. And here it is from San Francisco. They marched down to L.A. and exerted its will. Despite the fact the 49ers were missing, man, what were they missing? Their two starting offensive tackles, Joe Staley and Mike McGlinchey, as well as their versatile fullback, Kyle, who I cannot say his last name.
I believe it's Juszczyk.
Thank you. No matter that, the Niners played tougher and executed better. The Niners coaching staff ran circles around Los Angeles ballyhooed contingent. Kyle Shanahan was Sean McVay before Sean McVay was Sean McVay. And the 49ers third-year coach put his genius on full display in the Coliseum. I will stop right there because Jared Goff had a bad game. I think we know about it. But 49ers are for real. The LA Rams are sitting there just like the Dallas Cowboys on a losing streak. But it's just interesting when I read that, I didn't know that the 49ers were missing going into that game exactly what the Dallas Cowboys were missing. But they're just a much put together.
Their defense is insane.
Their defense is insane.
They hold the Rams to 7 points.
Yeah. And their coaching is way better than our coaching. Yeah. So if you can get the right type of coach, he can adjust to missing certain pieces and figure out not to put up 30 or 40 points because they didn't do that.
Still need a quarterback probably.
Yeah.
As he's proven the last couple of years, Shanahan has struggled. But now that he's got the pieces, now it's really humming.
Yeah.
And they can beat you in multiple ways.
Yeah.
That's scary. They're doing it without wide receivers.
Yeah. So that was they had the Cowboys ranked as the second biggest loss. So after the Rams, the Cowboys had the second biggest loss in the NFL, and the Cleveland Browns had the third biggest loss in the NFL yesterday.
Well, it is winning time here on a defeated Cowboys Monday. Pays to turn it on, leave it on. Each hour as part of our national contest, we're giving you a chance to win $1,000. The word for this hour is cap, C-A-P. Should the Cowboys cap Jason Garrett, if I was going to use that in a sentence?
Yes, they should.
Not really, you know, just figuratively there with the firing.
We are giving away $1,000, and that is no cap.
Yeah, okay. How about that? Text cap to 72881. Here it is, Jeff with second down.
All right, do you guys know who has the worst home field advantage in the NFL right now?
The Chargers? No.
Cowboys?
Chargers.
Yeah, you're on it.
Yeah, no, yeah, nobody goes to their game. So yeah, the Chargers.
The Cowboys is playing not a soccer great. Field. The Chargers play in a soccer field that doesn't always sell out, and most of the fans are not Charger fans who show up. It's really bizarre. So
brutal.
This week, it's the Steelers in town. The Steelers travel pretty well, so they had a lot of fans making noise. Now, here's the thing. The Steelers' sort of adopted anthem is the song Renegade by Styx, right? So
okay,
they get to the fourth quarter.
How does that go?
You've heard it before, man. I promise you.
Okay.
Yeah, I promise.
They get to the fourth quarter, and at a Chargers home game, when the fourth quarter starts, they play the Steelers anthem. Now, the plan in the stadium was it was going to be a Rickroll. They were going to start to play the Steelers anthem and then hit Rick Astley's Never Gonna Give You Up, like a little troll job, right?
Perfect.
Here's the problem. Most of the fans there were Steeler fans. As soon as the anthem hit, they went absolutely bonkers and drowned out whatever was playing.
No.
So it was just a start of the fourth quarter pep rally for the Pittsburgh Steelers and all of their players. So after the game.
Yeah, this is good stuff.
Yeah, it gets funky in a second.
So they started off dry like this and the crowd starts singing it?
I guess. I haven't heard the audio. But they get going, and the Steeler fans go freaking nuts, and the Charger players are sitting there like, what the F is happening?
How did our team do this?
This is our stadium. We're at home. After the game, quotes from the players. Melvin Gordon.
I'm holding out. Is that what he said?
Melvin Gordon. Oh. It was crazy. They started playing their theme music. I don't know what we were doing, that little soundtrack, what they do on their home games. I don't know why we played that. I don't know what that was. Don't do that at our own stadium. It already felt like it was their stadium. I don't understand that. Offensive lineman Forrest Lamp, here's my favorite. We're used to not having any fans here.
Damn.
It does suck, though, when we're playing their music in the fourth quarter. We're the ones at home. I don't know who's in charge of that, but they probably should be fired. It's not bad enough that no one cares about your team and you're not good. Now you're playing against a 19th string quarterback for a road team that's having their theme song played in the fourth quarter.
How long did they play that for?
I don't know exactly.
For it to take root.
I don't know exactly.
Yeah, probably wasn't on TV.
But apparently as soon as it started opening, the fans of the Steelers were just super loud and just thrilled, and they're up by 14 points. And they just went bonkers, and the Charger players were so confused. And, of course, they lost because that's what they do.
Wow, that's embarrassing to lose to the Steelers at home. Well, yeah, not a lot going right there. And that is a tough job to get right where you're doing bits with the music. And, obviously, the Groobs guy is terrific at his job, and he's getting called in to do it at different sporting venues because it's tough to do. And if you can do it right, you're in high demand.
I feel like what we should do at the Cowboys game / Doughboy games is we should play the Pillsbury Doughboy laughing every time our defense takes the field.
Geez.
And on third down, you know, after we give up another first down, we just have that Pillsbury Doughboy laughing.
Woo-hoo!
Well, speaking of food, on third down here, I'm going to give you some takeaways from the Jason DeGarrett press conference, but I got to tell you guys, I hadn't barbecued much since the summer, been very busy over the weekends, but yesterday I tried out a new rub that I got at Premier Grilling.
Oh?
The spicy honey habanero. It's orange, and it is amazing. I put it on some ribs, and it's my new favorite rub. So heading to a Premier Grilling near you, and I think you're really going to like that. I can't wait to try it on some wings, make a little extra spicy orange
magic.
Premier
Grilling this at the end of this week?
Yeah, we sure are, Mike. Yeah,
I think I saw that.
Yeah. Chance to get some good rubs, re-up on the big green egg charcoal, and just really tear it up this week.
Yeah, come on by. We are going to be at Premier Grilling. It's TBD, but that is coming up on Friday, so we look forward to it. Okay, Garrett was asked, have the Cowboys given you a vote of confidence? And he gave the biggest non-answer to it ever. He said, my job's to focus on doing a good job. But Chill was trying to basically ask, have you been given a vote of confidence? And Garrett gave a non-answer to that. He gave a non-answer to RJ's question about the missed low five, a complete dismissal of that. He doesn't pay any attention to it.
Time out. I need to take a breath.
That would be fun. You look like you're working hard on that down. Let's really calm down, slow it down. Make sure you get your next sentence right.
That would be an epic Saturday Night Live bit if they did Cowboy storylines. Like if the Cowboys were the biggest story in regular news as well.
Please beat the Eagles. I'm not ready to do the draft stuff yet.
They ain't beating them.
It's not time for the draft yet. I can't have that. They lose to the Eagles. If they lose to the Eagles, Mike, and they're 3-4, what will you think their record will be the next day? Because you swing.
I've swung already. I think right now they're going to be a 7-9 team.
Okay.
At the end of the year, they're going to be 7-9. I expect them to lose to Philadelphia.
Okay, so 7-9 then.
I think they're going to be about 7-9 by the end of this year.
Good pick. Time to get to work.
Yeah.
What position you guys want? Let me get ready for this.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a solid pick, isn't it? 7-9 will put you around 11 or 12.
Defensive tackle could have a major impact on this team. Like a really good defensive tackle.
All right, watch Auburn.
Since we have not good defensive tackle.
I think the fewest amount of wins they'll end up with is 5.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Yeah, what do they have? They have Washington and they have the New York Giants. Is there any other highly winnable games left on that schedule? Buffalo's not highly winnable. Yeah. So I could see 7. I could see 7, 8, or 9 right now. But the absolute low point, like if the injuries don't get better, the schedule is hard enough that they're not going to be favored if they are favored by any more than a couple of points. Elsewhere, though, the first down of the 4, why'd you call timeout? I thought it was going to take too much time was his answer.
That was part of his answer.
Had to stop and take a breath.
Yeah, that was the other part of his answer.
Did not want to call the timeout before the 2-point conversion, though, because they knew what play they wanted.
Okay.
So did the Jets, it seemed like.
Yeah, see,
How come you needed to, like, you didn't get to breathe during the 6 straight flags right before your play? You needed to breathe after that one particular play, just to make sure that your breath was right?
Yeah, I think there's something where if Jason isn't absolutely sure, it's part of the, like, he's an Ivy League guy, but one of the downsides of being a highly intelligent person, and I know this, of course, because I read about it. I'm not highly intelligent myself, but the second guessing, right? And when there are two good options, the smarter person is going to sit there and more commonly be paralyzed by it. That's
paralysis of analysis.
Yeah. You got to let your balls hang, you know, just pick something and go with it.
He's not, I'm not saying he's a bad coach because he's done this for a long time and he's proven he's average. Yeah. He's average at coaching. His brain is made for scouting, where you take your time and you analyze and you do all, and then you're like, here's my report on my hours of work. But if they're like, all right, pop quiz, we're going to now give you 20 questions and you have 10 minutes to answer these 20 questions, he's going to need a timeout.
And he thinks he's smarter, like reverting back to basic principles that are evergreen and always correct. Like, you know, when you're asked, hey, somebody's trash talking, you hear the Eagles head coach says they're going to win. What do you think? We're excited about the challenge. They're a great football team. We're going to focus on the challenge to play great football Sunday night.
I mean, that's who he is. He's being consistent in who he is. You don't even have to take a shot at the Eagles. Just say, I expect for them to expect to beat us. I also expect for us to beat them.
Yeah, there's all kinds of ways to play it smart.
But as a player, if I hear in the media right now, I expect to beat the Dallas Cowboys, I know we just lost if I'm an Eagle. And if then my coach gets asked that question, hey, they're saying they expect to beat you. And my coach says, I expect to beat them. I expect nothing less from what they like. Hey, put your balls on the line one time.
I hear you. He did give a somewhat more direct answer to, are you getting what you want from Tank Lawrence? Obviously, we want more from all of our players. So that wasn't a complete defense. I think, you know, for the first time 6 weeks in and watching Tank not more consistently get pressure, even more people are wondering now. Because, again, it's about two-thirds of the plays that he's in there for. There's something that's got to be going on with Tank, and the fact that they're not talking about it much does make me nervous. You know, if they were saying, oh, yeah, you know, there's something in there and it's slowing them down a little bit, they wouldn't have any problem talking about that. The fact that they're not makes me feel like it's something that's not going to go away this year, and they're just into managing it. Okay, when we come back, it's time for hour number 3 of the G-Bag Nation. Who would be the next head coach of the Cowboys? What would that candidate list look like? It's coming up next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.